Kia ora everyone, and welcome to this edition of Spanner in the Works. My name is Mandy Buswell, and I am the special correspondent for Spanner in the Works based here in New Zealand. Speaking to Todd Wilson this morning, and thank you for joining us, Todd. Todd is, as I said, my colleague at Red Hat. He's actually the department head of the Regional Office of Technology in Canada. I think in New Zealand, we would probably translate that to chief architect, regional chief architect, something like that. So tell us a little bit about what your remit is, I guess, Todd, in the space that you sit in.
Sure. Yeah, I have the benefit of having a national view of sort of what's going on in Canada. So, you know, from, you know, a perspective of being able to talk to all of the Red Hat customers, it's great. Prior to joining Red Hat, just for people to know, I was a public servant. And so I worked in the province of British Columbia, sort of driving their technology transformation and their ability to deliver digital services. So I think that's one of the kind of topics we're going to breeze into today, is kind of what that world looks like, delivering digital services in the public sector, and sort of, you know, exposing some of the nuances that are there.
Yes, different nuances. So Todd and I were talking because, Todd has come and spoken to customers in New Zealand, so our public sector customers in New Zealand quite a few times. And that's why I really wanted him to come on and talk about some of the things around delivering value in public sector, which is different, because I had been thinking about this difference between private sector and public sector and the challenges for those two organizations, in particular in this moment. I guess we've got a lot of new technology, new innovation that's happening. We've got perhaps some inertia or some people being a bit disheartened really about transformation journeys, a whole bunch of stuff that we're kind of facing. And I personally was thinking about what's the goal for private versus public sector and how that differs in the way they have to really work in the same technology space, the same vendor space, but their goals are very different. And so we were talking about how you do that, and you know, what matters. And Todd, you have an amazing insight into what matters to public sector. Walk us through that.
Yeah, and I think it is different. It's interesting when you do talk sort of the difference between private sector and public sector. It's pretty easy to say, you know, well, the bottom line is important, and that's what the private sector is all about. And that's true, right? If the company isn't making money and not profitable, then it will cease to exist. And so that is the top line priority. On the public sector side, it's not that easy to answer that top line priority question, right? It's complicated. You know, governments are trying to achieve social outcomes. They're trying to earn the public's trust or be a legitimate authority. They're trying to deliver services in a dynamic and changing environment. And those things, I think, are over and above kind of the responsible use of money that would be similar on the private sector side. What I do think, though, is there's a lot of similarities that I'm seeing, especially as folks are sort of trying to cope with the rapid change. I think, Mandy, you mentioned that technology is moving fast, right? It's moving incredibly fast, and it's not showing any signs of slowing down. If anything, it's accelerating. So I think organizations right now, whether it's public sector or private sector, I think if you look at what they're trying to achieve from an outcome perspective, then you really do start to see some similarities. And I think it's being able to cope, respond, and adapt to those changes that are constantly coming is a common ground that I think you can kind of step back a little bit and say. Now, how they do that, I think, is different again, right? So in the public sector, right, there is almost a negative expectation that they're going to be kind of behind the game a little bit. And I think one of the things that we saw, at least in Canada, I'm not sure if it was the same in New Zealand, but there was an expectation in Canada during COVID that the government become much more responsive and proactive and able to adapt to change very quickly. And I think the only reason most jurisdictions in Canada were able to do that were just because of the superhuman effort on the public sector side. The systems that they had weren't ready for it. The processes that they had weren't ready for it. The political level was not ready for it. But I think people just rolled up their sleeves and just through sheer determination and grit, got some amazing things done. And what we're seeing now, I think, across Canada, and I'd be really curious to see if you're seeing the same thing, is folks are A, exhausted, and B, they don't really know what to do next. There really hasn't settled down another direction, because there's such a human sort of, what do I want to say, a superhuman effort that got put out there, that folks are just kind of taking a little bit of a wait and see approach. And I think that's a bit dangerous. I think folks need to, especially in the public sector, need to understand that that kind of pace of change is still with us, and the need to respond to it is still with us. We just need to make sure we have the capability that it doesn't exhaust us.
That's really interesting, because I think, you know, if you think about what drives public sector versus private sector, and that bottom line, when we went through COVID, the need of the citizens of all the countries was great, right? And rapid and new, right? And suddenly, I think that there would be a lot of, you know, people say when they work for public sector that they do it for altruistic means. You know, they're not necessarily there just because of their paycheck. They're there because they really believe in the value that they're delivering to the citizens of your country, right? So when we went through COVID, and I didn't really think of this until you said that, but you know, the drive to do things, to be able to deliver the extra that all the citizens needed, whether that was, you know, getting special payments out or that the health changes, you know, we definitely had in New Zealand a very positive change in the health sector for automation. I mean, I can go for a blood test now. I tell my doctor I don't need any piece of paper, and it's all through straight away. Just walk into the blood testing center and all that information's there without touching a piece of paper. Now, that was a massive change, you know, and it's instantaneous. The next day I get a text message from my doctor to give me the results. That did not happen before COVID.
Definitely raised the bar for all of the other services in government that are kind of stuck, we'll call them, right?
You know, you've done this massive job just to get through and respond to the very, very rapid disruption that we had. And then what's next? You know, and there's a lot of personal satisfaction from a job well done and from achieving and from working really hard and getting that stuff, you know, out the door, even though it was, you know, may have seemed impossible, and you've done it, and now you go, oh, what's next? I liken a little bit to, you know, when I used to do a lot of stage productions and things, you know, that final night was always really sad, because you work very hard, and you're all in for that period of time that you're on stage, you know, for the run of the show. And then the last night happens and everyone celebrates the last night, you're finished. But the next morning, it's almost like you go into this state of depression, because you don't have to get up in the morning for the show. You know, it's quite
exactly.
And it's interesting on the private sector side, because they're obviously having a different, you know, because the world is we're bracing ourselves for a financial recession. And so they're doing different things.
Yeah. Well, I think there's some obvious things. I mean, I'll maybe go back to sort of tell the story of what seemed to work and what seemed to didn't, right? So when I was working as a public servant in BC, right, we were very focused on creating a capability for being able to deliver digital services and continuously improve them. So back to kind of taking that agile mindset and that continuous delivery mindset. And breaking down the way that government used to traditionally deliver services was they would take multiple years and a really long time to pull everything together and do a giant one-time implementation. And then they would expect that to last for the next 10 to 20 years, right? They would just not touch it ever again. It's like, okay, that is done and we're moving on to the next thing. What we realized, I think, from you know, a lot of different angles, was that just wasn't working well, right? It was too expensive, too time-consuming, and too prone to failure, right, over and over again. So when you looked at the software world, right, and you looked at the IT world, and, you know, we were in BC, and we looked down to Silicon Valley and saying, like, what are they doing differently? Like, they seem to be really knocking it out of the park. Why are they successful and we're not? It can't be that hard. And you see how they were approaching things with, you know, human-centered design, small iterative releases, you know, being able to pivot and change quickly, having the capability to go straight to production without mountains of approvals and tons of heavy weight to process, because you're managing risk in small increments instead of one great big bang. I think that's one of the things that the public sector in BC was able to kind of move the needle on, actually prior to COVID, and we kind of got the wheels moving on that. So when there was actually an emergency, right, when there was actually this, you know, game-changing event, we had already a little bit of muscle memory in this space. We could cope with it. So I think, you know, when we were talking about that Herculean effort, I think most jurisdictions coped with it pretty well. Some jurisdictions came through it better in the end than others, right? I think there was a lot of burnout in other places. And what I found when I went back and talked to my colleagues in BC, you know, they were putting out brand new apps and brand new services in, you know, days and weeks, right, on a pretty regular basis during the pandemic. And then you talk to other jurisdictions and they were trying to do the same thing and sometimes successfully doing the same thing. But, you know, it would take dozens of more people, you know, millions of more dollars. And it was just, you know, absolutely destructive to their whole organization. And so I think what I took away from that is back into a sort of how do we define value differently? I think one of the things that I was a key lesson from there is your organization sustainable, right? Is this effort sustainable? And I think the answer that we had in BC, because we did have a good capability of digital service delivery, is yes, it was sustainable. I think in a lot of other organizations, they didn't necessarily fail during the pandemic, but it was not sustainable.
What is your thoughts now for what you think should be happening in the public sector to kind of maintain the capability that they had and not, you know, kind of go, oh, phew, we did that. Don't have to worry about that now. Or even there, it's probably things that were half done as well.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of good things happening, right? I think, you know, I'm not the only one that had that coin drop moment on sustainability, right? I think everybody kind of took a step back away and said, ah, that's actually what we're aiming for, right? Is the ability to deal with change and adapt to change in a sustainable way. So what we're seeing now is a bit of a resurgence. I think a lot of folks, especially in the digital service space, right, where a lot of our you know, public money is getting spent and a lot of people are going, right, whether it's online medical records or, you know, the ability to, you know, pay taxes and bills conveniently via your phone, you know, all of those things. That's the expectation now, that you can just do all this stuff. Yeah, you know, marching down to a government office is the days of old. But in order to address a lot of these things that, like you're pointed out, a lot of stuff got left behind during the pandemic as low priority, there really needs to be a way to kind of break it apart, right? It's like if you try to address it all at once, it's not ever going to move. It's too big of a mountain. And so by breaking it into the pieces and prioritizing it and then sort of incrementally and bit by bit working on it, not necessarily one at a time, right? So having small modular teams that can start to, you know, sustainably introduce change across the system, what you find, I think, is you start to build up a momentum of an acceptance of change and a moving towards a goal. And so that's what we're starting to see in British Columbia, right? So the idea of an agile team and a small team that can move sort of across the organization and deliver different things, that's now kind of instilled into part of the public service. That's not just a magical Silicon Valley thing anymore. And so I've started to see that grow in other jurisdictions and as well federally, where folks are starting to realize that the unit of delivery is actually what a team can do. The unit of delivery is not what you can write into an RFP or what you can hire a whole bunch of consultants to come and do. The unit of delivery is what can this team do for us and what can be delivered quickly.
People are a little bit across both sides of the sectors are a little bit like, oh, when are we going to be done? And the thing is that you are never done, because actually transformation is just in the middle between disruption and equilibrium. The riding on a seesaw is a really great that's a fantastic thing to do, you know. That's fun. So, you know, it's not digital transformation or transformation itself is not done. It should be fun, right? But I love the way you talk about that as sustainability, because that's also a strong theme across both sectors, but in particular in the public sector, is this idea of sustainability.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a really, back to looking at the system of any country or any kind of delivery model holistically, right? So there's a lot at play, and I find, you know, folks now, these are, you know, conversations that I've had over the years with these organizations, and, you know, I think the agency, I think, has changed as well. I think the pandemic changed a lot of things in the public sector. And one of the things was, you know, to your point earlier, where folks weren't necessarily thinking that, oh, these old systems that we have and these old ways of doing things, it's been that way for, you know, decades and it's never going to change. I think that's boiled away a fair bit now. I think people are actually like going, huh, we can change things and we're actually pretty good at it. Now we just need to be able to keep it going, right? Like, how do we keep this going? And so I would say in a lot of ways, you know, the perception of the stuffy old government job, just doing your thing in a gray cubicle, I think that's really gone away. And I agree with you 100%. Most people who I talk to in the public service are quite enthusiastic. You know, altruistic is a great word that you used, and really, they can see that what they're doing has a direct impact on their world, right? So whether it's a, you know, provincial world, a municipal world, a federal world, right? They can see that, like, oh, I'm able to change the way that this works and I'm able to have a positive impact. I mean, what a fantastic thing to be able to say about your job. I mean, that's just great. So, you know, back to agile teams and all of these things. Yeah, you know what? It's kind of the new way of working. And I think the new way of working is almost addictive, right? People kind of really lean into it and say, yeah, this is actually fun work. I want to do more of it.
Being able to finish that unit of work or finish something is really quite satisfying. And, you know, it is almost addictive in a way, because you just want to lean in and do more of that and get more things out the door. I talked about there's always another thing. Have you got a thought on what you're seeing as the next thing?
I think the folks that are really forward looking right now are looking at process automation and any kind of, you know, whatever label you want to wrap on it, whether it's an AIML label or process automation anything along those lines, you start to really see that, okay, that sustainability problem that we have. The only way around this isn't, you know, slowing down isn't an option, right? Change is going to keep going faster. We're not really able to just flood more people in the door, right? There just isn't more people. So we're going to actually have to change the way we work. And so I think automating processes, embracing automation into the workspace, into places where it hasn't been before. Maybe we'll use like the label, you know, I don't know if it's politically correct anymore, to call it the white collar workplace. But really, the white collar workplace is kind of the last bastion of manual labor, right? And it's like, no, this place needs to involve very deep automation. And so whether it's, you know, AI doing some a lot of the heavy lifting, or whether it's, you know, process automation, workflow automation, all of those things that can be introduced and codified, standardized, and managed as code. That, I think, is where things really need to go. So in the public sector, right, I think also automation has often been perceived as like a job taker, right? Like, you know, folks worry about, I'm going to lose my job if they automate this. And I think now it's kind of dawning on people that there's no shortage of work, right? There is a severe shortage of people. And so we need to actually just work differently. It's not like they're taking your job away. It may change your job dramatically, but there still will be work to do, guaranteed. And so I think that mindset is starting to come to the forefront. And I think, in my opinion, that's where we really need to go.
I think that's one difference between public and private, right? When we talk to them about automation opportunities in the private sector, will be about jobs. I mean, I never talk about that. I never talk about being able to reduce headcount, because I do not fundamentally believe that that is the right reason to do automation. You do automation to improve the processes that you have and to allow your people to do more important things, not take their job away. I really, really believe that. But in the public sector, it is you actually want to keep as many people as possible. So when you automate people and when you automate processes, which potentially you could take some jobs away, that's not, you know, that's seen as a bit of a negative from the organization itself, because they actually want to maintain the people working.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's very short-sighted. I think when, you know, when people are working on short-term goals, right, that's when folks are making decisions like, oh, I can automate this, 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 and then I can send that whole department out the door. We don't need them anymore. What you lose there, and it's obvious to pretty much anybody who's sort of been through a few rounds of hiring and firing, is the amount of expertise that walks out the door is very significant, right? And just also the, you know, the corporate knowledge or the cultural knowledge that they have is highly valuable. And so taking the time to automate a department, great. But then also the next step is taking the time to retrain and repurpose those jobs and those people, in reintegrate them into your organization from another angle. And you will reap the benefits of all of those years of experience and that corporate culture and all of the things that you're trying to achieve. And so that, I think, is the longer term view is definitely more successful. And so I think in the public sector, that's, I think, a little easier to do in Canada. Most public sectors, folks are in a union, and they're, you know, the union has sort of an umbrella of protection. And so that method, I think, is more acceptable. Mm-hmm. What I've is in the private sector, I think sometimes their goals are so short term that that longer play often doesn't get played, because they're working on a quarter by quarter bottom line spreadsheet, right? And if they can show progress in this corner and you know, cancel something, that they're not encouraged to think a year down the road to creating a new opportunity with those folks. It really comes down to just meeting expectations at these days, right? I mean, I can't understate the fact that I think the bar did get raised quite significantly, right? I think the response from the public sector during COVID was admirable. And now I think a lot of folks are coming back to regular government services that might have been, you know, pushed to the back of the bus during the pandemic. And the processes are broken. It's inefficient. It's too time consuming. You know, I can use an example right now. I'm going to see a specialist, and in order to get an appointment with the specialist, they have to mail me a letter that has my appointment information on it. But they will accept an email from me to give them the referral, but they won't give me the appointment by email. They'll have to mail it, because that's their process. And I'm like, well, if you're allowed to have an inbox, I'm sure there's an outbox on your email system. I'm sure it goes both ways. Oh, no, we always send them out by mail. It's like, okay, yeah. Maybe somebody should ask if it's time to automate that.
Thank you so much, Todd. I love our chats, and I always am inspired after speaking with you, and you always expand my horizons and give me new things to talk about down under on this side of the world. So just before we finish, I'd like to, you know, just wrap up here and ask you the question, what have you been thinking about lately?
Good question. And I think I've been thinking lately that I'm very optimistic, which is probably counter to, you know, if you watch the news on any regular cadence, you've already mentioned, you know, difficult economic forecasts that we're looking at. And then we have the pandemic in the rearview mirror and, you know, all of the geopolitical things that are going on. There's a lot to be pessimistic about, but I'm actually quite optimistic about the state of humanity right now. And I think that what we're doing is pushing change in a lot of the right directions. So I'm going to end on an optimistic note and say, I think we're doing all right.
Wonderful. Thank you, Namihi Nui. Thank you so much. And I look forward to our chat, our next chat.
Thanks, Mandy. It's been a pleasure.